some members might share the same biological body, yet we treat constructed bodies with the same respect as biological ones, because we presuppose the latter are constructions as well. Behind the makeup, we find no truth, but true makeup.
Yeah, that sentence was a little bit the one that like popped out then for the for the whole program here.
Yes. So, what is the importance of makeup in your life?
Well, it has this double meaning, so that's why it's small. It's not in capital letters, and there's not the minus between make and up. And so it has, it's to make something up and maquillage, so make, yes. And so if you take off the fond de teint, behind there's more fond de teint and more makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And the yes, the point of it all is that actually to reveal or to, yes, that's what we consider being true or fixed is just a fiction, actually, is made up.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, yes, identities or artistic genres.
And so they all live in the same biological body?
No, on the website, also it's because the internet is like this. I mean, it's also, the manifesto is written for this web page and the internet. So in the internet, you could do that. I mean, it's very little used, actually. Like Facebook and all these, they ask you to have a to relate. They always try to relate one biological body to one presence in the internet, one identity in the internet. Or even if there's several, that it should relate to one. But actually the potential of it is that you could treat the ones that have a biological body and the ones that don't have a biological body, the ones that share one, with the same respect. I mean, it's also a little bit, there's a little bit of humor in there, I guess.
And how would you say that they live together, Antonia and Werner Hirsch and Henry Wild? How do they relate to one another?
Marie was always doing this joke. Yes, no. Yeah, like the so I guess the point is that identity is not something fixed or authentic, and that what is written in your passport is an often quite violent construction. So in order to critique that, I guess, and to take it in one's own hands and to have some fun with it and to unsettle the certainties, yes, one we might have about this, there's all these people.
And how do they live together? Because they all make different work. They appear in different scenes. They relate to different people. And how does this work for, in terms of artistic production?
Or life. I mean, it's also in life. And it's not so strict or clear or anything like this. I mean, Werner Hirsch can be Agnes B. And then be in the credits Werner Hirsch and, you know, like in Toxic, for example. In Frau Böse, we haven't seen her in a long time. It's fueled by, I guess, also it's fueled by desire and humor and... So, yeah.
In the talks that I had with all the other people, they said Antonia is very good at not working alone.
That's sweet of them.
It's funny. I think it was Arantxa and Lindley said it as well, and someone else referred to it, I think. And I was wondering what it means for you to, with every new work you make, to make different assemblages of people. What this importance of collaboration is in there for you. For example, when I look at the credits of Frir or now Abecedarium Bestiarium, you see this like whole list of people that actually are being present through you. So there is always this
or vice versa.
Yeah. But
because I mean in the Bestiarium I'm basically surrendering to their scores, to their compositions,
yeah,
that they wrote for me. And they have like lots of different styles, and I wouldn't necessarily, the choreographer Antonia Bear wouldn't do this style necessarily. That will be present in the Bestiarium. So it's, in a way, it's giving away the signature of the genius artist, and to say, okay, I'm doing your pieces the best I can. So in this way, actually, the Abecedarium Bestiarium is making a link to Isabel Spengler's work, Vater, Mutter, was soll ich heute film? Father, Mother, what should I film today? And actually also Psychic Tequila, an older film by her. Like this, I think it's, it's in a way, it's a critique of this signature of the genius artist. And even of the artist as it is seen today, not so much the Van Goghian, I mean, of course the Van Goghian type, yeah? But also the one that is now on the art market. Because it's also this one is really about the signature. I don't know how you say it in English, yes, you know, like the name that is, and then that the work looks like the name, and you know.
But then how, if you would continue to talk about this signature, how do you deal with that? Because you're also on the market now, and much more and more, I would say.
Still like in this circuit of performance, not performance art, but actually
performing arts.
That's there, since there was like so much fights in for it, there's this Intermittent, and in France and here in Belgium also there's this statue. It's different than the art market. In the art market that they sell objects, and the artist makes, yeah, is supposed to make a living by selling objects. So the whole thing about doing performance live art in galleries is a completely different one for me than doing it in this in theaters like I do, where actually people are paid by the hour. Or by the day, you know, it's like the time you work. So you're paid before the premiere, before the object is finished. And I appreciate that very much. And it has a socialist background, and it's very precious to me. And I'm trying to stay there and in this system and to defend it. And that's why there's this drag identity that I have, that I, one of the many, but like one of it is Antonia Bear, the choreographer, in order to be in that system and to say yes. There's no performance artist in the whole in all these people in all the drug identities, there's no performance artist. Maybe you noticed. There's no actor either, but
a choreographer, a composer.
Yes. A husband.
Husband.
A drag queen, a horse whisperer who became a non-dancer.
Who's the drag queen?
Agnès B. and Frau Böse. There's two actually, but they have only one dress. You can see it in all the work since like 2000. They have only one silver dress in the works from Pauline Boudry and Renate Laurent in the holiday movies. And like, there's always this one silver dress. I just realized it. In maybe. Going back to a question that you had before about collaborating with people. So the way it came about was that in Chicago, William Wheeler and me, we were studying with Lynn Hickson and Matthew Gullish, and collaboration was a little bit the good way to do things. So it was called collaboration, which actually is strange because collaboration just means working together, people working together, but they meant more something in the sense of collective collaboration, you know, like that the group, like in performing arts, that it would be a group that makes a show and not a director or not, yes, and then the actors, but like actually a group does it. And even though the teaching of Lynn Hickson was absolutely not producing avatars of Goat Island's work, and she didn't intend it, there was this atmosphere that this would be the most ethical way to work together. And I met William there, and somehow we wanted to be bosses. We wanted to decide. We wanted to be also having experienced this collaborational structure with Ex Machinis, with Steffi Weismann in Barbara Lorek and Stefan Fenz before in Berlin. So I was like, I knew that this, it wasn't for me. It's good for other people. There's not, I don't want to say there's one way of working together that's better than the other, but it wasn't fitting me like a shoe, you know, really. It was so, and then I found William, and he also wanted to be the boss. So since we didn't have money and we wanted to be the boss, we decided that we would be at each other's service one day. So one day you get 4 hours, William gets 4 hours and he can do what he wants with me, and the next day I get 4 hours and I can do what I want with him. And then we started making pieces that were going well together, but without our intention, like duets. The Mrs. and Me, not The Mrs. and Me, actually. Dog Dog and Concert for Sœur Sourire. So Dog Dog was by me and Concert for Sœur Sourire by William. And then Holding Hands by me and Without You I'm Nothing by William. And then we felt, I would say, and I think, yeah, we felt like a married couple. We were like two, and also an après-midi, actually, we did like this, because we didn't have money, so, or not enough. So, and I had this theory that either you rehearse or you don't. Like, either you rehearse a lot or you don't. So we were like, okay, we don't have money to, and I wanted to work with not just duets, like not only always William and me on stage, but for people. And so that's how it came to this very complicated score and headphones on stage. So then you don't have to rehearse, and then it's good. And then, so we felt like a married couple too much, and so we wanted to open up and to work with other people, and William had also already introduced Stefan Pente in the work with Country Bubble, with Dolly, about Dolly Parton and the theremin. So he made these wonderful backdrops. And so they started to work together a lot. And I started, I think that's what Cut Calendar was. Oh, yeah. With Antonia Livingstone and Anne Quirin and Maxi and Katzilein. and then like this, because two is easy, you know, I'm on at your service one day and then next day you are at, it's very easy, but once you are more people you have to organize yourself a little more. And then I guess I got more interested in the fact that how you work together, you can invent too. You can invent, not necessarily invent, but invent for yourself, you know. So not only the artwork would be something you create, but also the working structure. And since I'm a fetishist with twist, I'm quite anal. I like, so the structures were quite structured. They were like basically the ways, their scores basically. And each piece then has its own score of how I work together with others, or they worked with me. They work with me until today. For Rir, for Lachen, for Laugh. Yes. It was birthday presents, so they're gifts. But for the Abecedarium Bestiarium, they're actually, I don't know how you say it in English, commande, Auftragsarbeit, commissions. Yeah. So it changes a lot. And I was also interested in seeing what changes. And shall I tell you what changes?
Of course.
So birthday presents is like you get what you get and you send it out. For my birthday, I wish this. And then you get stuff from people. And some people never give you that, you were like, oh, please give it, you know, from you, I really would love this present. Well, you don't get it. And then you also get it from people you didn't expect. And the scores themselves were also very different, but they were not as complete or thin or, yeah. Like with the Bestiarium, I really got pieces, you know, like people, like my friends really wrote pieces for me. And even with the direction of it. and spend a lot of time making them, those pieces. So you see much more the different styles of, I don't want to say signature would be a little wrong, because now, I mean, it says in the contract, like, because there's a contract also, like an invitation letter, basically. It's not, yeah, that where it says that I'll perform them once, so in the presence of the authors, in the way the authors really like it. Like, I try to do my best in the authors, and then I'm allowed to do my own soup with it, my own cuisine with it, and they are allowed too. So they can also take the score and do it themselves or whatever. They can.
Yeah, but anyhow, it's written for you, right?
Yes, but sometimes, like for example, Stör Stefan Pente, he was working on the Black Mamo, the Drepanis funerea, this extinct bird from Hawaii. So he was already like, and then I was like, I'm doing this bestiarium about with the extinct animals, and then he wrote the piece for me, but actually it's part of a bigger project of his. So he might, you know, do, I don't know what he's going to do, but... In many pieces, I'm interested in the self and the other. Because the self is only... Well, first of all, like, identity as something that is always changing. I mean, that is, yes, that is fluid and that is a fiction and always changing. And then if you look at that, then you necessarily come to the question of the other, who is in front of that person. Also because I'm oftentimes switching it around, so it's not the author who is like, I am da da da, but it's actually about how is the author seen from out. Like Lachen, for example, here is a self-portrait through the eyes of the others, and the others say, this person, Antonia Bär, is laughing a lot. So that's then this person, Antonia Bär, said, oh, yes, okay, then write scores for my laughter for my birthday, please. And for faces is about the other, is about the interfaces relations, let's say. Of the it's called for F or R and not F O U R. So it's interfaces relations of the audience and the performers and looking at also at the construction which is called the fourth wall in theater, like and then My Dog Is My Piano is looking at interspecies relations. So
what is happening there?
I'm looking at my mother Bettina and Toki, her dog, and how they how the house in which they live since 7 years can be decrypted as a score of their duet, of their dance that they do every day since 7 years. So I'm looking at that, and I'm also looking at the language that they have assembled, that they call a patois of des espèces de compagnie, of companion pieces, patois. And patois is a derogative word for a non-standardized language. So it's a, because like they don't have a very academic career. I mean, they went to dance school, but you know, the way they communicate and the way they relate is not at all academic. It's really quite queer. So I'm looking at that language also. And at their, I'm taking their relationship seriously, let's say, and looking at them as equals. So not the dog as the slave of the human, but two beings that don't speak the same language, and the one has fur, the other one doesn't, and the one has four legs and the other one has two, and how do they communicate and how do they live together? And then on top of that, like, the thing is that the way they do this is really not academic. So that's why it was interesting to me to do that. Yes.
And how would you describe their dance?
So I'm basically, I mean, I'm looking at it. I'm trying to figure it out, and not necessarily figuring it out. So, for example, like my mother, she tells very great stories about that, like how the fur of the dogs, they are in the living room, you know, and then she puts them back into the garden, so then the birds can make their nests out of the fur, And then she sees the nest from the atelier. So also the birds are involved in this choreography. And then like there's like a lot of traces of that choreography. Like the doors are scratched, like of all the house, you can see it. And then you can see up it's Bimbo, the big dog, and down it was Kniki, the small dog. So they left the traces and yeah. And then you can notate that score. And then they are performing it every day too. Like the stairs of the house, like there's a special, they're a little lower at some point because that's where the dogs always run up and the human goes on the other side. Mm-hmm. So they are performing this score also every day. And also since the generations before that, like the stone of the house in the front door is all like smooth by all the dogs who were laying there since centuries. So says my mother, I'm quoting her. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, there's several things. There's like the animality or the animal and the human animal. So the other animals and the history of how these two worlds were put together historically also. And in the Abecedarium Bestiarium, I'm more interested in this, the symbolic, like what we project on animals, more than the actual interspecies relation, like more in My Dog Is My Piano, it's about how they live together, the two of them. Toki, the dog, and my mother, Bettina. and here it's more this other aspect. Like animals have never been allowed to be just animals. We have always made them into symbols. So it's like the idea to push that a little further and to look at that more closely. So there's such thing as why do human animals always call each other with animal names and things, you know? Like, du blöde Kuh. Or c'est chouette. Or, I mean, in language, it's so much. In the name, yes, personal names, I'm Bing Bear, yeah? And it's super complex histories. Because the animal names, in the German animal names, they're actually, most of them from the time, the Jews had to buy a name. Yeah. And so that's why like Rabbi Löw and it's all these animal names. So if you had a lot of money, you could have a very nice name. And if you had a little money or you were dissed for some reason, you had that's for other names. But that like these animal names in German come from there. So it's also like a historical construction because these people had other names before, of course. And then there's such thing as, like I was curious with Dodo Heidenreich, I wanted to know because I'm called Bear and when I was little, my mother, who is called Bettina von Arnim and who feels like this is a too big name for her, like it's like a too big coat put on her. And then like my father was called Bear and then she, like the whole family iconography, yeah, was bears. Like so the birth announcements would be like bears, you know, little bears having, and we didn't have dolls, we always had bears. And this whole, like it's so, and then you see a family reunion of the bears. My five, and they all look like bears. They all look like polar bears. It's so crazy. Because why? I mean, I think because we project or it does something to you. And I mean, and this I wanted to know from Dodo, like she knows that the Dodo is this beautiful big extinct bird, and I wanted to know how it is for her. Yeah, you have to come watch her theater piece that she wrote for me. Das Theaterstück von Vogel Dodo. We need to ask her again. I mean, her answer is Dodo-ish. It's like Dodo. Like how she...
Extinct.
So I can... No, quite alive. But... I think she has to tell it with her own words, because her own words are so specific that I cannot, and I don't know them by heart, that I cannot tell you now like this. Yes, so the affinity between human, animal, and animal, and how, and that it shakes the security we might have in our definition of human, animal. I mean, in this sense of like, the human is very different from the animal, you know? And that's where the human starts, and that's where the animal begins, and it's all this fixed, it's this fixed, stable box or identity. And actually, if you look at historically and in language and the symbolic link between the animal world and the human animal world, the human world, then you realize that it's not that fixed at all.
And if you, like now we are talking about...
So this is an affinity that's shaking, shaking up securities we might have, I like very much how François Nudelmann defines this word, and I think, and I also was inspired by him, by this conference in New York, Infinite Affinities, that he was hosting, and where, I did My Dog Is My Piano for that conference back then, so it's not that long ago. Anyway, so the idea to have a word that could name relationships between humans and between humans and things and between human animals and, you know, between entities, basically between entities, that's not arborescent. So, for example, family ties are arborescent and this affinities are not. And yes, they're not, like the word affinity, it means affinitas, so it's a geographical etymology. And so it's not on this blood and biology, making babies kind of imagery. And this is very helpful, I find. I mean, it's very... And also, affinity always has the disaffinity in it too, of course. I think I find it very useful for me because of that. Yeah, like for example, the queer family, yeah? It's still the family. So with the affinity, you get rid of that family term. And maybe, I mean, it's always that I'm critiquing the notion of authenticity. That's why, like, behind the makeup, there's more makeup, like, to critique what we think is, what we call authentic. And to also, like, not only critique it, but also make up stuff within that. I mean, inventions within that. So within it, yes, not besides, but within it. Yeah. I find it, yes, I mean, the blood ties, if you look at the, yes, German history, and for me it's really linked to that, to the Shoah, and to the fact that because of blood ties people had to wear a yellow star and get exterminated. And so I think that's very much. And then the whole construction of the normative family. Papa, mama, boy and girl, and they smile like in the IKEA catalog, and it's so present. So, yes, it's in the end, yeah, I mean, there's so many reasons why family for me would be something. Also, the family is against the others. It's closed. So, for example, my mother, who is a runaway from Arnhem, they are adlig. They are in English aristocrats, and she ran away from. But like, there's this thing of you belong to this aristocrat name, and this and the rest of the world doesn't. And von Arnims are high, if you are von, you are higher than the others. I mean, there's this whole, that's family, you know, and they have a family tree, like tracing the family tree back to ages and ages, when others like don't do that, cannot do this because they are they're cornu, they are like mixed from lots of travels, and you know. So there's it's a real regime. The family is a, yeah. I can't stay in one, you know, if it's only about queer identity and this, I can't take that. I need other. And also, yes, and then you realize that things are linked, but like, I need to be sometimes with people who just talk about music, you know? And yes, it's true that I am in different scenes in Berlin, or yes, I know, and I don't go to see, also like as a spectator, yeah, I don't go to see only dance pieces, and I don't go to see only concerts. But it's true that there is such thing as people who go to see only this Echtzeitmusik concerts, and people who go to see only the choreography works. Like I see this, I see in the two, like I see the same people,
yes.
Respectively in the. belonging. I mean, the Echtzeit, there's a very nice atmosphere there. And because people go there all the, like, really regularly, there's a lot, and it has this. And I think what I appreciate is also the, at what, where it is in the economical, cultural, where it is at there. Because it's in these very small places oftentimes, cellars and former squats, and the music is performed because people want to, not because it's they make a lot of money out of it, but they want to, and they want to perform together. So that, and but still they make a living because they tour as musicians somehow. And there's a lot of support to each other, towards each other, and at the same time very deep conversations too. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice, I don't know, it's a nice mix of being deep and having a good time, and there's a bar, you know, and it's late at night, and you do something together, and yes. And I guess I had a little bit of admiration for that. Yeah. No, I don't think I belong to any scene. I mean, I think there's something in life, like the longing, you know, to belong. I don't know, like, yes, have a wife and have children, and then you belong and you have this family thing, no? But I don't have that. On the other hand, I have, I mean, the way I grew up, or my parents, there's a strong background there. They are both artists, and we get along very well. And so there is, okay, I'm not lost in, I'm not lost in the ether. And also there's a sense of a specific landscape that I feel very attached to.
What would that be?
In the south of France, in Le Lot, in the Lot. It's a cultural landscape. Yeah, it's a lot old one, and yeah. So it's not nature. It's like this. There was a lot of people living there until 1900, I guess, and then there was the exode rural, and then now it was totally empty, and now there's like people living there again, but coming from England and God knows where. It's getting gentrificated in the countryside, basically. But you can still feel the place, and the people are so great there. Like, they are, because they have been independent farmers without, since a long, long time. So there's this great sense of how to be, to help each other, and to be against the authority.
And they're farmer and artists at the same time.
No, they did. I'm talking about the farmers there that are from there. The like, as you call it, the autochtone, the ones, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this is the place where you meet Isabel.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where my mother lives too, and that's where I also grew up there, in that region. And that's where lots of works were made. I mean, For Ida was made there, lots of films by Isabel Spengler, and also collaborations of us were made there. And this summer we did the etchings for the Bestiarium, and we're going to continue with Nana Heidenreich and Ida Wild and Dodo Heidenreich and Angela Anderson. And yeah, I mean, and a lot of holiday movies were made there. So there's a lot going on there all the time. One must say that the Bert Schaubuck invited this focus program. Like, so it's basically coming, it's an invitation coming from outside, asking one artist or two, like Antonia Bär and Werner Hirsch, to present. I mean, they presented it. It's not a carte blanche, so they presented it. They presented the people that work with these two artists. And then it made us think about that. If this invitation would never have come up, we wouldn't have thought about it. And the funny thing is that this kind of invitation happened also to other artists in the show. Like, for example, Pauline Boudry and Renate Lorenz were invited in London, and they wanted to invite William and me to perform in their focus program. And then I broke my arm, so we couldn't go. But now the same thing is going to happen in Glasgow. So you could, basically, if you look at all these artists that are here present, you could pick any of them and do the same thing. They're all stars. All these artists are stars. And there's no border around them. So the universe is going like it's... You can't circle it. You can't put a tie around it. And so Marie Vermeer, she said yesterday, it's like a nebulose. And we don't, yeah, it's a kind of constellation, nebula or something like nebula. This. Yeah, it's a, well, they're all stars, it's always moving. And also what I want to say is that there's not one, you cannot pin down one system of relating to each other, nor of nor one collaboration ideology or system. So it's complete plurality. I mean, plurality. And I appreciate very much that there is such thing as being inspired by the other and being also contaminated somehow, but there's no ideological base that we would say, okay, conspiracy is our thing and we all work with like our collaboration method would be similar to the one of conspiracy, and we could make a list and make a manifesto that's how it is and that's how we should do it. Or scores, everybody has to work with scores because scores is the most ethical way of working together, and since we're all fetishists we have to do this. Like, no, there's not, you cannot, it's not like this. And there's all these different ways of doing, of relating to each other. I would even say relating to each other rather than only collaboration methods, because it's broader than that. I think the form of relations to that I have, for example, with Lindy Ennis is a very different one than the one I have with Isabel Spengler. And I'm trying to figure out to have one example of a collaboration between people in this nebulose, in this nebula who would collaborate but not be friends. And I think it exists, actually. Mm-hmm. And if you are a love couple, you're not friends anymore. Then you are, but like it's also another... Like William Wheeler and Stefan Pente, they have like this very amazing relation, and they do work together since many years. And so it's I wouldn't call it that it's friends.
Yeah,
they are lovers too. They are, yeah. And I think that is also due to the economic... underlying structure, because I think if you work without necessarily a lot of budget and money behind, you tend to choose your collaborators different. You don't do a casting. Ah, I had something on the tip of my tongue, like how your project would link with some of mine, because let's talk about the last project, Abecedarium Bestiarium. It's because in a way it's also a mapping of relations, of the people that wrote the scores for me and that I relate to and that relate to me. So there's a lot, they're all long-term friends or my wife. I mean, yes, different relations, but so it's in a way it's a mapping of that, a mapping of these affinities, and this is a little bit what you do too at your table.
Yes, but I there is a difference in the sense that what you do is you try to map the world that surrounds you, like the people you invite are people you're close with, I think, I suppose. And what I do, and that's why it feels also as some weird gesture to do. That it's a world that I'm, that is strange for me,
or a world
that is removed for me, from me. Whether this is removed in artistic practice, whether this is removed in age, whether this is removed geographically. For example, now all the people I interviewed are based in Berlin. I have to travel to go there. It's not the world that surrounds me.
That's why Ida called you the young ethnographer. Tom Engels, the young ethnographer. It would be so lovely if there would be a photo of you. And if we can't hear your voice on the side, there should yes, please.
And with a net to catch butterflies.
Please, yes. And Ida can dress you up.
Yes, she told
that
me.
Would be so nice if the young ethnographer would show his presence.
Yes. But that was a plan to have a kitchen interview with Ida.
That's okay.
What we're going to do.
Yes.
But she told me I have to come completely in pink. I don't have that. And she said something like pink lederhosen, something like with these.
Ah, yes.
These straps and a shirt. And then, like, the, you know, like this safari hats made from bamboo.
Konrad has one. She should dress you up.
She knows.
Yeah, and she loves doing that.
Yeah. It's a difficult project, I think. Because how do you talk about relations? It's like actually such a basic thing, but it's also maybe the most difficult thing to try to pinpoint.
Or you don't pinpoint it. I mean, I'm just reading this book here. Really nice. But it's French though. Based on Alice in Wonderland, and it's just like putting words to things that I was thinking, you know, like this kind of book you read, you're like, ah, thank you, yes, that's what I was thinking. And then so the identity philosophical fairy tale, mm-hmm. And so it's based on Alice in Wonderland and Hume's, which Alice in Wonderland is based on, and he's saying how, like, he's critiquing a lot Lévi-Strauss, and he comes from an Arab background, so there's also a lot of Arab stuff in it, which is nice because it's very rare.
And what does he propose?
And he proposes, I think, I'm trying, I wrote down it, it was like a little Tom Engels there. I have to find it. Ach ja, where is the little Tom? About the name, I mean, so good. Like exactly what I was. Ah, here. Yes, in a little bit what you were saying. So it's the identity as a decoration, parure, like you know, schmuck, yeah, feathers and mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, his suggestion to describe the facts and not the doctrines, and the philosopher is making is infantilizing himself if he tries to find a theory for everything. He's like the child who always says why. So he's suggesting that we should observe and describe, knowing that we'll never describe everything. And then at the next sentence, as soon as I take a pen in my hand, I'm selecting. Faire justice aux faits, so to give justice to the facts. And and then it goes on. That
This is really
to accept that, to accumulate facts. And I think he's quoting a lot Wittgenstein.
This is very interesting that he addresses this notion of facts so much, because I was reading the Cyborg Manifesto of Donna Haraway.
Yeah.
And I wrote this quote down where she says, social reality is lived social relations, our most important political construction, a world-changing fiction. But then it's interesting to have this fiction opposed to factuality, what he proposes.
But I think they meet, huh?
But he said, so he says to give just
to accumulate facts and to accept a discontinuity between the facts.
Yes. Okay.
So I think it's the okay. And that's why like identity is a fiction, because there's the facts of your perceptions, but the way you link them is this fiction, this construction.
It's very remarkable, I think, like how in your artistic practice you come so close to this theoretical discourse. On my way here, I was reading When Species Meet.
Mm.
There she says, no, she's quoting a woman. I don't remember her name, but who was spending 10 years with the primates, the monkeys in Africa, and she made this note in her notebook, and she said, the relationships are the smallest possible patterns for analysis. The partners and actors The relationships are the smallest possible patterns for analysis. The partners and actors are their still ongoing products. It's all extremely prosaic, relentlessly mundane, and exactly how worlds come into being. So it's all the time about this this idea of fiction and construction, and while knowing it, still living it, because that's also something very interesting, that you can maybe say that everything is makeup, or that you construct all the time, but at the same time you also live that. It is not all the time on a meta level or from an outside mm-hmm. perspective that you try to determine the constructions that surround you, but you are all the time in it and doing it. And this I find very interesting, that that these two perspectives, on the one hand, like me sitting here and looking around and trying to grasp the world, and at the same time having an embodied experience of that.
Yes, and this strategy of makeup, of making up, and of promoting Werner Hirsch and Henri Fleur, and making sure that this Antonia Bear doesn't get mistaken with some kind of authentic identity, because basically it's just a drag identity. The choreographer is a drag identity too. So it's work. It's actually work. It's very demanding and active. It's not just fun to celebrate and cultivate this unsettling of these identities and these names and constructs. No, but I wanted to say this because yesterday there was a Gallant and there's also, you know, like to this notion of I have to find myself and to live my desires out, you know, and to and actually there's a little bit of that, but it's so réaliser, you know, like to live it out and to, oh, you're gay, so you have to live it out and you have to go to go with all your feelings and stuff like this. And I just want, then it occurred to me, oh yes, but actually there's something else there also at stake, which is an action that has to be done every day a little bit, like that, this to not to do not accept the normative box, the normative identity that would be easy to fulfill.
Yeah, I think it's hard work. Huh? Yeah.
I mean, it's also pleasant and stuff, but like, yeah, it is. Activism is a little bit, but activity, it's a practice. Yeah. A practice that is going towards activism, I would say. But then it's also cultural, so I don't want to, I mean, I have a big respect for activist work that's really activist, and I don't want to say that I'm actually doing that because I'm doing cultural work, but, and I'm living my life. And it's also a way this happened to me, or I'm doing this because I couldn't accept or there was no such thing as a normative great box that I could fulfill from the start on. So also that's why.